Good morning. You guys doing well? I hate to tell you this, but like summer's way over, halfway over. You know that, right? Like in 4, 5, 6 weeks, we're going to be back into school. But just want to say welcome. I'm so glad you're here. But here's what you need to know. I've had a great summer. Have you guys had a great summer? Man, I hope that you have. Here's a couple of cool things. Here's the highlights of my summer so far. The first one is this. I got an opportunity to go fishing with my brother-in-law and some of his friends up in Canada. And so some of you are like, that sounds boring, and to me, that sounds awesome. So we got to spend 4 days fishing, and I loved every single second of it. It was such a blast. Another highlight for me is our family just 2 weeks ago went camping. And I don't know if your family's like, I found that there's like either the camping families, and are you kidding me? We'd rather die than camp families. And so whichever one you're in, we're in the camping, we love it category. And so we went out and camped and had a great time. Here's what I found about myself. If I'm with friends and family and outdoors, I'm happy. Like that's kind of where I really, that's a happy place for me. But both my fishing opportunity and camping, there was also a common denominator around those two things, and that's a campfire. So when we go camping, last year, I remember it really well, we went to Minnesota, and I'm sure for a good, but it seems stupid to me, reason, you can't take firewood across the border, so we had to buy our firewood for our campfire in Minnesota. Well, they sold us wood that had apparently been soaking in water for like 2 straight weeks. It wouldn't light no matter how much fluid or whatever you put on it, it just wouldn't light. And so it's a real bummer around the campground. But this time, we were in Maquoketa State Park and we had wood that was very seasoned, and man, it was awesome. We lit it on fire in this beautiful fire around the campsite. And you know this, like a campfire is like the magnet of camping, right? Everyone just kind of comes around to it. It's where everyone begins to hang out. My kids love to play with it and stoke the fire and burn things, and so we're just dialed into that fire. And this fire, a lot of great things happens there. If it gets a little cooler, it warms you up. The smoke, even though it can blow in your eyes, it also will keep the bugs away sometimes. And for some reason, there's a level of conversation around a campfire. It's just incredible, right? You just sit around and talk until way late into the night. It's just a blast. But what's interesting is at the campsite, you actually, around every camp place, there's a ring around where you can do a campfire, and it's a rule. You have to keep your fire in that. It's because of people like me, for the record, but you have to keep your fire in this spot because there's tons of people around, and if these fires get out of control, it could be a problem. But inside this ring, the fire is a delight. I mean, it's like it's what's incredible about camping. Now, contrast that to when I went, when I was fishing. We're way in the middle of the Canadian wilderness. And so in the morning, you would go fishing, you would catch your lunch, and about midday, you would get out of your boats onto shore and have a shore lunch. And we didn't bring propane or anything like that, but go get dead wood from all the trees and put it and stack it up and make a fire to fry all the fish. And it was incredible, but where we were at, you had to be really careful. So if this was the water, you would set your fire on the rock right next to the water because there's no camp or fire rings where we were at. And so what's an incredible thing for you to cook your lunch and hang around and kind of get a rest before you go back fishing for the rest of the day, there also can be some danger in it. Because we were out fishing and I was like, man, what happened to all these trees? They're all burned down. Was there a disease or was there a fire? He goes, oh yeah, there was a fire. And he goes, I was like, how does that happen? He goes, it can happen from a lot of things, but this fire was caused from a shore lunch. Someone cooked their lunch, and they didn't get the fire out properly, and the next thing you know, this particular forest fire had burned 25 miles straight of forest. So once you get that in your mind, a fire from here to Ames, everything in between, dead. And here's a reality. If you don't have a ring, when the fire, which is so awesome, is so delightful around a campsite, when it gets outside of its container, it destroys things. It just destroys it. And that's exactly what we're going to come to today, because here's what I've found about all of humanity in this room, all of you, is we all have this fire that's burning inside of us, this fire of sexual desire. It's a part of who we are. It's a part of what we're doing. And here's what you need to know. Sex, inside the containers of which God has made it, is delightful. It's awesome. It's so good. But when it gets outside of the bounds that God has designed for it, it can be really destructive. It can be really destructive. What's interesting in this room is if we just kind of sat down, one of the hard things about preaching is you have a real story, but if we sat down over coffee, I'm almost guaranteeing you that in this room, there's probably 100, 200 forest fires in your lives because sex has got outside of the bounds. And it's been destructive. And if you started telling the stories of where it went bad, tears would start to flow. Because for whatever reason, it's this really emotional thing for us. And so here's what I want today. I want you to walk away not scared. I don't want you to walk away going, we can't talk about this. Because for some reason, sex in the church is also, it's like, I call it Voldemort, right? The one you can't speak of. But we're going to talk about it today because the scriptures give a lot of clarity. And it don't just give us what we shouldn't do. It also tells us what we should do. So let's jump in this morning. Proverbs chapter 5. You want to open your Bibles. Proverbs chapter 5. We're going to be there the whole time. We're going to go through the whole chapter of 5. And if you don't have a Bible, that's great. It's also on the screen. So let's start with Proverbs chapter 5, verse 1. My son, be attentive to my wisdom. Incline your ear to my understanding that you may keep discretion and your lips may guard knowledge. It's like, son, listen. For the lips of a forbidden woman drip honey and her speech is smoother than oil. So father, we got to remember that Proverbs, the genre, is like a father writing to his son. And he's saying, son, listen to me. Look at me, right here. You got this? Stay away from the forbidden woman. And so in the context, it's clearly about that. But in this room this morning, there's sons and daughters in here. And what's interesting is adultery would have been the main sexual temptation in the ancient world. We've created 1,000 new ways we could be sexually tempted in the modern world. And so this morning, we're going to talk, and where it says forbidden woman, we're going to talk about what is forbidden in general to us all sexually. We're going to talk a lot about the ways that we have messed up sex. And so what is this forbidden sex? What's this forbiddenness? In the New Testament, it says it this way. Colossians 3, verse 5, it says, put to death, therefore, what is earthly in you, sexual immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire and covetousness, which is idolatry. In the New Testament, that word sexual immorality comes from the original language, which is Greek. It's the word porneia. And it's like the umbrella term of any way that's outside, which is forbidden. It's the blanket word for it. It's like you've got to get rid of forbidden sex. So let's define it. Brent, what do you mean by forbidden sex? I'm going to give you a definition. If you're a note taker, this would be helpful for you. Sex and sexual fulfillment outside the marriage of a man and a woman. What is forbidden sex? Sex and sexual fulfillment outside the marriage of a man and a woman. And so we could list so many, guys. There's so many ways for this to go wrong. I'm just going to pull up some that I feel like we struggle with in our culture. The first one is porn, right? It's finding sexual fulfillment in a screen. It's not even in a human. Hookups. We live in a hookup culture. It's not stigmatized. You can just hook up with someone and be fulfilled in committed relationships. These are relationships that are committed to each other, and they're already engaged in sexual activity before the covenant of marriage. Same sex. It's an issue in our day that those who are struggle with same-sex temptation run into it, an adultery, which is really clear from the text. Where a husband and wife, one of them goes outside of the marriage to find sexual fulfillment. And here's what's crazy. This forbidden sex, it's incredibly desirable. Check this out. For the lips of a forbidden woman drip honey, and her speech is smoother than oil. I don't know how much honey you eat, but in the ancient world, there was no ice cream. There were no Snickers. There was no sweet swirls. There were no Thelmas. The sweetest thing that you could eat was honey. And it was rare. and they desire it, just that sweet taste. And her speech is smoother than oil. Can you imagine a culture where baths weren't normal? And oil would, a fragrance that would smell smooth and clean, and it would make these dry hands that had worked in the stone and in the earth, and it would smooth hands, something so desirable. It's desirable. This forbiddenness is not like, it's like, oh, that's horrible, let's stay away from that. No, this forbidden, it's desirable. But the problem is it's destructive. Look at verse 4. But in the end, she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. Her feet go down to the death. Her steps follow the path to Sheol, and she does not ponder the path of life. Her ways wander, and she does not know it. Maybe you were a more mature parent than I was. But when my kids were really little, and I could still trick them, we were about at a restaurant, they would see a lemon, and they, in their mind, fruit is sweet. And so they would look at the lemon or the lime, and they would point at it and start crying. I'm like, ha ha, watch this, honey. And I would take the lemon and give it to them, and they thought that they were gonna bite into something oh so sweet. And what they do, they bit into it, and you've seen these baby faces when they touch a lemon, like, ugh. And I laughed. But here's what I'm telling you. As desirable as it is, what the proverb writer is saying is, even though it looks so sweet, even though it looks like it's going to be so good, it is bitter and it leads to destruction. So, point one, you might want to write this down. Stay far from the forbidden, you will avoid destruction. Stay far from the forbidden and you will avoid destruction. So he's gonna dive in now. He's gonna give instructions of what we should stay away from, and he's gonna give us instruction of what we should stay near. This is verse 7. And now, O son, listen to me. He's gonna say it again. Hey, if I didn't have your attention before, give me your attention and do not depart from the words of my mouth. Keep your way far from her and do not go near the door of her house. It's like this, what's forbidden, don't go near it. Stay far, far away. It's in the command form. Stay far away and do not go near. And this is so simple. Anyone can understand this instruction. It's so simple. But if we will follow it in our life, it is also so powerful. Sometimes you want a more complicated way to avoid this. It's simple. Stay far away. Don't go near it. I don't know how you learned the difference between near and far, but the way I learned the difference between near and far was Grover from Sesame Street. Some of you know what I'm talking about. So Grover is this little green or little blue dude in Sesame Street, and today he says, today I'm gonna teach you the difference between near and far. And so you hear these footsteps, you see the head of the puppet, and he's like, near? Right? Far. And so he keeps doing this. And I watched it again. It's on YouTube. You should go watch it. For 2 minutes, he tells a 2 to 5 year old, this is the difference between near and far. And what's crazy is we know this, don't we? We know the difference between near and far, but oh my goodness, it's really hard in this arena to do it. We know what it is. And here's the reason it's hard. Physically, you crave it. You have hormones in your body that want sexual activity. Emotionally, you deeply crave the connection that comes alongside of it. And it's really hard. But the teaching is clear. Stay far, far away. Because it's easy. Oh my goodness, is it easy to be near porn. Like, you just have to pick up a phone and you're there. It's not hard. He's like, get far away. I don't know what it looks like for you to get far away. Do you need to have a filter? Do you have an accountability buddy? You just need to throw a smartphone away, a computer away, some sort of subscription away. Get away. And if you follow people on social media that makes you want to look a little longer than you should, get the heck out of there. Stay far away. Hookups. We live in a hookup culture. It's not stigmatized anymore. It's never been easier. You can get an app. There's an app for that, right? You can just go hook up with whoever you want. Or the Proverbs writer says, no, that's destructive. Get away. Don't go to the bar. Don't go to the club. Delete apps from your phone. Don't text those people when you're lonely late at night. Stay far away, whatever it means for you. Maybe you're in a committed relationship. Man, is it easy to justify sexual intimacy in a committed relationship? Well, we really love each other. We're really considering marriage. I get it. It's easy. Holy cow. But he says, stay far away from it. I remember battling this with my wife. When we were engaged, I lived in this apartment building. She lived in this apartment building, and we were engaged. And you're like, well, that's not fun. I mean, it's cool because we can see each other all the time. But we had a fight on our hands. It's like at 8 o'clock, we can't hang out with each other. You got to go home, go by yourself. Like, you can't do that. Because we were committed to staying far away, and everything about us didn't want to fight it. With same-sex temptation. There's many of you in this room that struggle with same-sex temptations. It's easy to run into it. There's ways that you can do that. There's communities and cultures that will just let you cheer you on. You got to stay far away if that's a temptation you're struggling with. You got to realize it. And I would also say stay far away from people who would make your identity about your sexual orientation. You're more than that. You're so much more than that. And adultery. Unfortunately, what I found out, no one's exempt from this. So easy for someone to catch your eye, for the conversation to be stimulating, for you to let your brain go there. What we're saying is, get away, back up. Don't go to that gym if they go there. Don't shop there anymore. If it's a coworker, like drive, park in a different parking lot, find another job, do whatever you gotta do, but get out of there. Stay far away. I was in early in my ministry, I did a lot of youth ministry. And these three students were really good friends of mine, and they were in my worship band, and so I had was discipling them. There was a long story, and they wanted a snake for a pet. And so they had found somehow that there was a snake fair in town. How do you find out these things? I don't know. But they had found this out. And so they're like, Brent, will you take us? Our parents say it's okay. I'm like, I'm in. And so we drive and go to the snake fair. There are some people at the snake fair. Let me just tell you that right now. And you can buy everything from like snakes that will kill you dead with venom. Like you have to have a license apparently for that. But they sell everything. And so we went, and the reason they wanted to go is you could buy a ball python that had been hand-raised. And so they were going to buy a really juvenile ball python. And so we get there, and we buy this snake. And super cool because it's so docile. You can hold it and all this sort of stuff. And so I wasn't very smart back in those days. So we're driving home from the snake fair, and I'm on 1604 in San Antonio, which is a major highway. And I'm about to get off. I was like, hey, give me that snake. And so I'm driving the car and holding a snake. Yeah, I know. Sorry. I don't take your kids on youth trips, so you don't have to worry about it. And I'm holding this snake, and I'm like looking at it. I'm at a stoplight, and I'm playing with it, and all of a sudden, the snake decided not to be hand-raised anymore. I'm not kidding you. Sometimes I literally am like, Brent, are these stories really true? And I promise this is true. Like, I'm sitting here, there's a stoplight, and this snake starts getting feisty. And I'm driving, trying to turn left, and the snake recoils and launches at me and grabs onto my arm right here. And I'm trying, and I'm now grabbing the snake and throwing the snake across the car. And let's just look at what happened here. I'm holding a snake while I'm driving. And here's what I'm telling you. Dial in here. Some of you are holding a snake while you're driving. Right now, I guarantee the Spirit of God's like, yep, boom. Maybe it's an extra glance, more conversation, something really hidden that no one knows about. Stay far from the forbidden, because it leads to destruction. It leads to destruction. You're holding a snake. It's going to get you. I don't care if you think it's been hand-raised. I don't care if it's not venomous. It's going to get you. Here's the price. Verse 9, lest you give your honor to others and your years to the merciless, lest strangers take their fill of your strength and your labors go to the house of a foreigner, and at the end of your life you groan. You groan when your flesh and body are consumed. I love this picture. You give your honor to others. Some of you are giving your honor to a digital screen. You're giving your honor to a one-night stand. How's that walk of shame feeling in the morning? You're giving your honor to someone other than your spouse. And you're giving your years to the merciless. The number of times I've watched brothers and sisters with tears going down and saying, I committed to them, I gave myself to them, I gave my body to them, and it did not even end in marriage, and my heart's just broken. Years to a relationship that ended. And strangers take your strength, and your labors go to the house of a foreigner. It's a really strong picture of adultery when you lose your family because you ran in a different way. And the shame that comes along is strong, and you say, how I hated discipline, and my heart despised reproof. I did not listen to the voice of my teachers or incline my ears to my instructors. I'm at the brink of utter ruin. In the assembled congregation, so many people I've sat with, Brent, I can't believe it. I knew better. I can't believe I did this. Oh, I would do anything to change it. Shame is so strong. Here's what I'm trying to tell you. Stay far from the forbidden, and you will avoid destruction. Stay far. So simple. So the question for you this morning is, what is your strategy to stay far from the forbidden? What's your strategy? Everyone in this room is dealing with a different forbidden. I don't know what you're dealing with, but what's your strategy? You need to talk to some brothers and sisters that'll help you process that and help you think through it in a godly way. Stay far from the forbidden. You will avoid destruction. But then, Scripture does not just talk about the destruction of sex. It also tells us how to enjoy it and what it is for and who it's for. So here's the point number two. Stay near the one God has given, and you will find delight. Check this out, verse 15. Drink from the water from your own cistern, flowing water from your own well. Should your springs be scattered abroad, streams of water in the street, let them be for yourself alone and not for strangers with you. Drink water from your own cistern. A cistern is another way to say well. And it's in the command form. It's saying drink water from your well. Get all of your water. Get all your sexual satisfaction from your spouse, students, singles. If God has not given you a spouse, you shouldn't be drinking water. I know you may be thirsty. It's like just drink from your own cisterns, which is the spouse that God has have you. Don't scatter your springs abroad. Don't do that. Stay right there. And then look at these instructions, verse 18. Let your fountain be blessed and rejoice in the wife of your youth, a lovely deer, a graceful doe. Let her breast fill you at all times with delight. Be intoxicated with her always in her love. It's real fun to read those verses in public. But listen, we need to break through the awkwardness and see the intent of what God is pushing through here. Listen to this. Rejoice and take pleasure in your spouse. This is a command. This is like, yeah, if you were thinking about it, you know, just whatever. God is saying, no, rejoice and take pleasure in your spouse. Keep the fires burning. Keep it going. I know it was easy when you were first married. Continue to cultivate your sexual intimacy with your spouse. Keep it alive. Go for it. It's a gift of God has given you. Sex should be a part of your marriage. I'm just telling you this morning, if it's not, it's probably an indication that something somewhere else is really hurting. And you should figure that out, because God's command here is a priority of the sexual intimacy between a husband and wife. Next is, your bodies are to give delight and pleasure to each other. Let her breast fill you at all times with delight. You know what's crazy? Is that our bodies, our culture overly sexualizes our bodies. But historically, nakedness brings just as much shame. I was reading earlier this week, just in my own personal time, in 1 Samuel, and Saul, King Saul, was stripped bare, and it was taught for his embarrassment because he had disobeyed the Lord, and he was bare before the Lord, and he was embarrassed. Think of the Nazis. Do you know what they wanted to do when they wanted to humiliate the Jews? They stripped them. Because our nakedness is shameful. Guys, let's just be honest. None of us in this room, I know of, like, really look good naked. Like, we're all wrinkly and hairy and fat and not, just, our bodies are actually pretty awkward if you don't put in Photoshop. And here's what he's saying, in the midst of your awkwardness, in the midst of what should be shame, you should use in marriage, your bodies are tools of pleasure and delight. What a gift. What a gift God has given us. God gave your bodies to be a delight towards each other. And the next, it's God's good design for the process to be so good, it's intoxicating. Be intoxicated always in her love. Sex is a gift from God. He intends for us to fully enjoy. Deep intoxication, physical pleasure, this joy of emotion and intimacy with each other. He wants it at such a level that it's intoxicating for us. That's what his design is. But there's a problem. When you talk to couples, one of the biggest things that couples struggle with is sex, isn't it? It's always sex, money, in-laws, and communication, which deals with all three of those, right? Here's what I found. Most of us in this room, we want the fruit of pleasure, delight, and intoxication, and we don't want to work the soil of forgiveness. We don't want to work the soil of trust and vulnerability. We don't want to love each other in the way that Ephesians 5, we preached on this and we went to the book of Ephesians. You should go back and listen to that sermon. We don't want to love each other at the Ephesians 5 level, which helps create an environment for Proverbs 5 to happen. We don't want to take the time to plant a seed of respect and unconditional sacrificial love. We just want to demand, why can't we have more sex? And the reason is because God wants us to stay near the one God has given. Stay near, not just sexually. Yes, sexually, he wants you to enjoy it, but staying near means that you're caring for the relationship, that you're sacrificially loving, that you're respecting and honoring one another. And out of that, this beautiful intimacy happens. So here's the summary. Stay far from the forbidden and stay near the one God has given. Stay far. Remember, Grover, stay far. Hey, I'm over here. And I'm going near it. But the one God's given me, I'm coming up and I'm figuring out how I can serve it, how I can honor it. I feel like the writer of Proverbs, because he's like, listen, son, listen, listen, listen. As your pastor, I'm just asking you, would you please listen to what I'm saying today? Would you please have an ear to hear it? And you're probably saying, well, why do preachers, they're always preaching against sex? Why is the Bible so strict about it? And let me tell you why. In 20 years of ministry, you see some things. Let me just classify it. The most painful tears, the most destructive family things, the most shame that you see in pastoral ministry is when sex gets outside of where it was designed to be. It just is. The most painful, the most intensive to deal with. And God's word here is not to squash you, it's to protect you. Stay far from the forbidden. I'm gonna tell you a couple stories where I saw this happen. Someone didn't stay far from the forbidden. The first marriage I ever did was to a young couple. They were going through premarital counseling, and she said, yeah, my dad won't be in the wedding party, but he has been invited to the wedding. I was like, well, what's the deal? He's like, well, when we were pretty young, he had an affair on my mom, and he left us and completely just ignored us and went away from us. And we've not really had contact from him since way back then. And so I'm up preaching the funeral, not the funeral, the wedding. Yeah, that wasn't a slip. Sorry about that. I'm preaching the wedding, and right after all everyone had come in and I start talking, there's a guy that walked in the back door and stood in the back. And right before we were done, he took off. And then we're in the reception, and we're hanging out, and it's, you know, reception is super fun. And all of a sudden, it gets to the dance. You know who's dancing with the daughter? The stepdad. You know who was hiding in the back of the corner? I was like a movie scene for me. Here's the stepdad dancing with the daughter, and the real dad was back in the corner in the shadows with tears running down his eyes. He got out of bounds. He didn't get to dance with his daughter at her wedding. Another story, heartbreaking. One of my great friends, colleague, is actually my boss. When he walked into marriage, he brought in a massive porn addiction. We're not talking about, I'm talking a massive porn addiction. And multiple years into their marriage, he finally confessed it. And he got a lot of help, and he was restored, and the relationship was restored. And some point along the way, he jumped back into that stream, and he hit it. And on hiding it, it took him to places that he never thought he could go. And ended losing his ministry, losing his family, divorced. And there's this moment, this surreal moment, my dear friend, and our families were together. We were at a camp, and there was this moment where my kids were still too little to do this, but his son was not, and he wasn't at the camp. And I had to wake up super early one morning, and I'm sitting in a boat fishing with his son because his dad isn't there to take him. Then a few years later, his family actually came when we had moved up to Iowa, and they're sitting in our family, and I'm sitting around the table with his family going, what in the world? He should be here. But he had chased. He didn't stay far from the forbidden. He ran towards it, and it destroyed his family. It's real, and I'm not trying to scare you. I really am not. I'm trying to win you. I'm trying to warn you. It really has an impact when you chase what is forbidden. But I also want to tell the separate side of the story. Stay near the one that God has given. I'm going to show you this picture. This is 52 years ago. Jim and Reba Gordon is a couple in our church. They've been married 52 years. And to me, they're heroes. They've been in ministry. They've served the Lord. They've been faithful, been married for so long. And there's not a lot of older brothers and sisters in our church, so they're heroes in my perspective. And can I tell you something? I have no clue about their sexual life. No clue. Not interested in it. But you know what I've noticed? Is that they have lived a long life. They have 3 kids. They have 9 grandkids. One, you know, some of the stuff that they faced in their life is they have actually lost a child. Some of their life, they were in ministries that were not, that were hard. They had to stay faithful. But you know what they did? They stayed near to each other. I want you to see this picture. 52 years later. Let me just show you that picture. Because when we start off our life, we never dream for our life for one night of ecstasy. We never dream for our life, oh my gosh, if I could just have one weekend of a getaway, all the sex that I want. We don't dream of that. What we dream about is living a life where we're standing next to the same person forever. And what I'm trying to warn you this morning is if you let sex get into the forbidden realm, it causes unbelievable danger, unbelievable destruction. But if you stay near the one God has given you. We can end up like this. And I know it's not a recipe for it. It's going to be perfect for everyone. There's sin involved. But you can see the vision of where you want your life to go. Look at verse 21. It's important that we read this. For man's ways are before the eyes of the Lord, and he ponders all his paths. The iniquities of the wicked ensnare him, and he is held fast in the cords of his sin. He dies for lack of discipline, and because of his great folly, he is led astray. Brothers and sisters, our lives are before the eyes of the Lord. Who among us is not tempted to run into the realm of forbidden? Man, it just seems like, oh, it's sweet honey. It smells like beautiful oil. All of us can run towards it. We all struggle. We also come. You're like, well, Brent, what's our hope this morning? Let me read it to you. Verse 2 Corinthians 5:21, for our sake, he made him who knew no sin to become sin so that we could become the righteousness of God. In the midst of a topic where almost every single one of us is guilty at some level, this morning, I'm just telling you that the gospel covers it all. And some of you this morning are like, Brent, I'm guilty. I don't even know God, but I know I'm not just guilty with sex. I'm guilty with a million other things. And I'm just telling you that the goodness of the gospel says you can be forgiven. And some of you are followers of Christ and you're going, Brent, I've been way too, not only have I been near, I've been jumping in the pool of some unforbidden stuff. And I'm saying, stop, back up, and enter into Jesus who can forgive you. Now you need to know this. This is hard to say. Some of you have made some mistakes that have real consequences. It breaks trust when you break relationship. It just does. But I'm telling you, in the cross, there's forgiveness and reconciliation and power to overcome this sexual temptation. And I hope that wherever you're at in the gamut of following Jesus, you'll bow your knee to Jesus and say, I need you. Would you bow your head? Father, this morning, we want to be sober for just a few seconds and realize that if we've not journeyed into the land of forbidden, it's still so simple to do it. Temptation is raging. And God, this morning, I'm asking that you would help us to realize where we're far and where we're near and how to get out of there. But in the midst of our guilt, Jesus, would you come and remind us of the gospel, that you forgive, that you give power to overcome, that you want to walk with us, that you want to sustain us, and that your ways are good. They're not to hold us back. They're for our good, for our safety, and for your glory. Spirit of God, you know the work that needs to be done in these brothers and sisters' life. We expect you to be among us. We expect you to be leading us. Help us, Lord, to stay far from the forbidden and stay near the one God has given us.